3 hours down, one to go. Cold as ice is right. It's freezing out here. I played the MLP version of this yesterday. Lloydy wasn't impressed with that, but I was. Let's go to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline to begin our fourth hour here. Graham Creech, Dean Brown, Cam Clement, and pleased to be joined by John Shannon to talk all things NHL, including the viewership numbers down. John, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Terrific. Thank you. John, let's. I know that Dean wanted to make sure we got you on to talk about the ratings, the NHL ratings in the U.S. They've taken an enormous hit, among other things for sure. But just the viewership being down 22% year over year, and some of the reasons that that could lead to that. I have a few of my own ideas, but when you see those numbers. Is there anything that sticks out in terms of what the NHL could do better to improve those?
Well, I don't think the onus is really on the NHL. I think the onus might be on the networks, but I think the numbers are skewed a little wrong. I think that what's happened so far this season from a scheduling perspective is there's been a ton of games that are seen nationally on TNT and ESPN and also seen regionally on their regular carriers, and so viewers have had a choice. They can watch the local show or they can watch the national show. It's kind of like in Ottawa, if you had a national game between the Senators and the Washington Capitals that was nationally on Sportsnet, but it was also seen on TSN regionally, I think most people would watch the TSN show. And so those numbers that have happened so far have been, I think, a little skewed incorrectly. And I think it's like it's an apples to oranges comparison in comparison to last year.
John, for those who don't know, John is the co-host of the Bob McCown podcast, but in other iterations, the former executive producer of Hockey Night in Canada and the former vice president of broadcasting for the NHL. And that is the expertise that we wanted to have on the show today. John, what part of this as well? We're all creatures of habit. What part of this, or, you know, what percentage do you think, just ballpark in your head, is also the fact that as creatures of habit, when you change major carriers, NBC's out and now you've split it between ESPN and TNT, is people just having trouble finding it because it's not in the normal place where they find their hockey down in the States?
I think if that was to be the case, Dino, I think that would have been last year. And that didn't happen last year. You know, there are lots of different things at play here, but I don't think that's as much of a factor. You know, one of the things, and even in my time at the NHL, one of the most important things was to get coverage from ESPN. And when I mean coverage by ESPN, I don't mean games. I mean everything else. The best example of mine this year was the night that Alex Ovechkin scored the hat trick in Chicago and got to 800 goals. And ESPN had a game, and it was a good game. It was fine. But after the game, ESPN Sports Center carried 25 minutes of breaking down Ovechkin, breaking down the game, breaking down the how Gretzky Ovechkin rate, and it was worth its weight in gold because that's where the non hockey fan is watching sports. You know, they're watching and tuning in at 11:30 at night to watch Scott Van Pelt do his gig, and that's got a better chance of dragging new fans in than anything else that's going on. So I thought that from that perspective, that's one of the ancillary bonuses being on ESPN. So that, to me, is important.
Yeah, big time. When I asked you the question and I referred to the NHL doing things better, I think what I was thinking of are a couple of ideas, and one being the playoff format. Just with the additional teams now, you get 32 teams, and there's still only 16 teams make the playoffs. Would you like to see more teams make the playoffs and adopt, whether it's a Major League Baseball or NBA or NFL, additional round or a play-in or wild card scenario so that there's more teams? Or would you even like to change the playoff format if it does stay the same and go with a 1-8 or something rather than the divisional play?
If you take a look at it, you know, there's still a higher percentage of NHL teams make the playoffs than in the NFL and in Major League Baseball. So that to me, I think is a moot point. The question is the other winter sport, basketball, has created this play-in tournament. And I think people in basketball, and I still have lots of friends there after working for an NBA team for 5 or 6 years, have not decided whether it's good or not yet, because what it does do is it disguises mediocre teams to think they're playoff teams, and then you get mediocre playoffs. I think the best example of that might have been this year in some of the, you know, in the extra game in the NFL. Were those play-in games really good? I'm not so sure. So from that, but that's a different thing. I would like to see 1-8 in the conference. I think that we get, you know, tried and true rivalries too often in the playoffs, in the first round. You know, so that to me is something that I would really like to look at. Funny, I did a poll on my Twitter page in the last 24 hours and got about 8,000 people voting, and more than 70% wanted the 1-8 scenario versus what we have now with the wild cards and the division races, or 1-16, 1-16, which we had in the NHL, you know, when both of you guys were just kids in the late 70s. And we had a Vancouver Philadelphia best of three series. It wasn't very much fun to follow when you think you had to fly back and forth from Vancouver to Philadelphia to cover the series.
Shanny, you've already mentioned off the top that, you know, it really is kind of an apples and oranges debate when you're talking about that gross number of down 22%, when you look at the fact that how the regionals impact the nationals. But it has given people the opportunity, on social media especially, to pipe up with all the reasons they think the game is ailing, and that's the reason why the numbers are down, and everybody's, you know, got their reasons why they do this, and that's why the numbers are down. And but, you know, in jobs that you've had before, you've had a chance to look at data, you look at the focus groups, you look at the demographic breakdowns. When you look at that stuff and what fans are really saying, when you get them in rooms and you start to look at the data, is it we in the media that perceive or are hypersensitive to having our opinions out there about what's wrong with the game? Or is that really truly a fan reaction? Do fans really think that the game has a problem that has to be fixed and that's why ratings are down? Or is it more just noise from us?
Well, first of all, if the numbers are down, this will be the highest revenue generating season in the history of the National Hockey League at $5.4 billion. So somebody's doing something right. The game, the game on the ice might be as entertaining at times and as fast at times and as safe at times that we've ever seen, Dean, ever seen. And we have that. I mean, you're old enough to remember, you know, the clutch and grab of the late 1990s and early 2000s, that, you know, every game was grab and there were no lead changes. It was a tough game to try to really promote. That's not the case anymore. The product is really good. So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is that hockey people, not just the media, but hockey teams themselves and the fans, they love negative. They love to eat their own. You know, for some reason we have become a grass greener mentality in our sport. We look at the NBA and admire it. We look at the NFL and admire it. We look at Major League Baseball and admire it. You know what? Major League Baseball and all these sports have been trying to emulate so many things of the National Hockey League the last 20 years. Every one of those leagues has sat in the situation in Toronto saying, you guys do it better than anybody else with video review. Your technology is better than ours. How do we fix ours? How do you run the process on a nightly basis? they've all copied what the NHL has had. You know, we all, you know, think that it's great that when you watch a NASCAR race, you can talk to the drivers in pit row before the game starts. We've been able to talk to our players since 1952 between periods. And now we take it for granted, and we think that when they get a halftime interview with a coach in the NBA, it's cool. I just don't get it. I really like where our sport is. I really like what our sport is doing. Can it be better? Sure, it can be better. But we have to keep an open mind, and I would rather, you know, give it a spoonful of sugar than bury it with a big shovel of dirt every once in a while, like I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, I think the game is... It's so fun right now with the skill, and you look at the way that teams are built now. Like, you'll have guys on the fourth line that are highly skilled young players on rookie deals or whatever, rather than just a fourth line full of guys that their only job is to fight and intimidate. And I'm not trying to say that was bad hockey or anything, but I just, the level of skill.
No, it was bad hockey. It was bad hockey.
The level of skill now, and the video, the skills coaches, people spending time on their edges or on their shot or whatever, it's incredible. But where do you stand on the international stage? If anything could be done better, and if the NHL should or should not be in the Olympics or forcing or trying to find a way to get a mid-season tournament, like, is there anything that you'd like to see done better in terms of growing it at an international scale, having best on best?
I'd like to make sure every team in North America makes money first. I think that's important. You know, right now we have in our league 10 teams that make a lot of money, 10 teams that break even, and then 12 teams that are losing money. And it's those top 20 teams that are subsidizing the bottom 12. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the New York Rangers pay $30 million into revenue sharing to prop up the Florida Panthers and the Arizona Coyotes. That's a reality of a business partnership and revenue sharing. I'm okay with that. But I'd like to see everybody be making money, because that means more money for the teams, more money for the players, more money invested in growing the game in grassroots areas. You know, every time we talk about growing the game, the one thing we have to realize, and hey, I've been to Ottawa with my kids for tournaments. Unfortunately, our sport has become a rich person sport in so many ways. We have to find a way in growing the game to make it affordable, so that families can, and I'm talking about new Canadians too, that can take part in the game at an affordable price, so that they learn to love the game like we love the game, and then they become the next generation of fans. That's the challenge we have right now across the board. We have allowed equipment manufacturers to jack up the prices. We've allowed every cost possible become major issues in our sport long before everybody reaches the NHL. And that, in my opinion, is our biggest problem. It's not a game for everybody anymore. And when we were kids, we used to think it was a game for everybody.
Shani, what do you make of what's going on in the PA right now? They're going through the process of trying to find themselves a new executive director. And I think that, you know, for those of us who live in the game, anytime anything happens at that level, it makes all of us nervous. It makes all of us think about it. It conjures back up to work stoppages and lockouts and all these other things. And I've always found it, you know, something that you don't want to think about, because in so many ways, as you mentioned, the game is in such good shape and there's so much money to split up. But there's always that unknown when you're going to have somebody at the top of the union. Do they want to go and fight with Gary? Do they want to make a deal? And, you know, are we going to see games stop? All those questions start coming up, and it's just beginning now, because the PA is just beginning the process of getting a new executive director. What's your feel about that?
Well, the good news is that we have a collective bargaining agreement until 2026. Which means that we do have a little bit of labor peace for at least the next 3.5 seasons, and we have an Olympic window in there. So we do have a chance to, you know, improve the international game and be on that stage, and hopefully the three of us can meet in Italy. You know, that would, wouldn't that be fun to go to Italy to do hockey? Yeah.
I'm in.
Me too. But then the process is what the players are going through. They are trying to protect themselves. Remember, they're business partners now. They're 50% involved in this league with hockey-related revenue split down the middle. They're trying to find a person or persons that can best represent them across the board with the commissioner and Bill Daly on the other side. And right now, they don't have that strength. They have to find somebody strong enough to deal with Gary and Bill. Because let's face it, and Dean, you're around the game. You know, in many ways, from a revenue generator, this is an 80-20 proposition. The league's generating all this sponsorship. The league is generating so much and trying to grow the game. And the Players Association is kind of flattened right now just because of where they are from a leadership perspective. I think a new voice can help, and whether that's the outside voice of the former mayor of Boston, Marty Walsh, who's rumored to be in the running, but has no familiarity with the NHL, doesn't understand the history of the game and the negotiations, as you talked about, the lockouts that we've gone through, or a guy like Mike Gillis or Matthew Schneider, who's currently at the Players Association in the number two position. This is going to be an interesting couple of weeks as the Players Association muddle their way through this, and hopefully they find a way to some unity amongst the players. The other thing I would say is that, you know, in the mid-90s when we went through these strikes and lockouts, a strike in 92, a lockout in 94, the big boys were involved. Wayne Gretzky was involved. Mario Lemieux was involved behind the scenes. I certainly hope as we proceed that the leaders of the game, the players that are the stars of the game, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, I hope they're involved to that same level, and I'm not sure they are. They have a really good selection group, a search committee, veteran players that understand what's going on, but not of the ilk of McDavid and Matthews.
Well, Shanny, we asked for 10 minutes of your time, and we took 25, so our ratio is still on our side, which I like.
Well, it's good to, hey, listen, you got to know, I mean, you know, I wrote this book, Evolve or Die, and you know, the only chapter they took out is how Dean Brown saved the Canadian Football Network. So,
you know what? I'm like, I only have like 11 pages left, and I'm sitting there going, well, the part about me has to be coming soon. I got to be honest with you.
Well, if, you know what? By the way, I know that's a lie, Dean, because the first thing you did when you bought it is you checked the index.
No.
Is my name in it? You know?
No. You know, the first thing I did is I said, yeah, Bruce, don't worry. We're on the bus, and I got it for Christmas. And so the first thing I said was no, Bruce, because Bruce Garriock said to be on the bus, give me that when you're done reading it. I said, you couldn't buy one to make him a bit of money, for God's sake? So the first thing I did before I even opened the front cover was tell Bruce, yeah, he can have it when I'm done. Too cheap to buy the book for you.
I cannot believe he's buying dinner the next time around, for sure.
Oh, man. Anyway, my favorite story, by the way, is the Mike Palmateer story. That's my favorite story.
Of all the stories in the book, that's the one that gets the most comments from my friends.
Well, mostly because I can absolutely see you saying that when he called back. And people who read, I'm not going to tell you what was said, because some of the language is book language. But let me just tell you, go buy the book and read that part, and you'll understand why so many of John's friends like that part, because that's who John is. I loved it.
Well, that's good, Dino. It's great talking to you, man.
John, really
Have a great weekend.
Appreciate your time and insight. There goes John Shannon, co-host of the Bob McCowan podcast and author on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We'll take a break.